Welcome to the Money Insights Podcast, where high income earners go to learn wealth building strategies that will take them from high income to high net worth.
Okay, welcome into today's episode of the Money Insights Podcast, where we talk all things money and business. My name's Christian Allen. I'm your host. I'm with my co-host, Rodney the Pod Zabriskie, as always. And we are indoors trying to keep warm. What's up?
Yeah, man? Yeah, I'm grateful for indoor warmth because we got dumped on. We got snow. So we live in Utah. We're not. It's not unusual to get snow, but it's unusual to get as much snow where I am. At least where, you know, in the valley, like the mountains always get multiple feet of snow. Did I say multiple feet? Multiple feet
you
of
did.
Snow.
I love it.
But here in the valley, you know, we're used to maybe 3-4 inches at a time, and this time, man. Two storms in a row, we're hitting double digits on the snow count. So
we weren't as bad as you, but it is definitely white outside. 6 or 7 inches last night. It closed down the schools. Mm-hmm. I've got a house full of kiddos that are, just like regular. They're kiddos. Yeah. They're crazy, but I'm trying to keep them down while we record.
I'm sure they're being studious. They're on their online classes, right?
Yes, they're all focused. And that's true. They didn't just cancel it. They technically moved it to online. So theoretically, they should be online.
Gotcha.
Okay, Rod, this is an appropriate topic for today, right? Since we're going to be talking about kids.
Yes.
We're going to be talking about Rod's top 5 reasons to raise smart money kids.
Yeah.
Now, we're going to bonus it out, Rod, and we're actually going to talk about 5 ways to do it. So we're not just going to leave the listeners hanging.
Good.
They're actually going to get to hear not just why you should do it, but how to do it. And here's the thing. Everyone that has listened to this show know that Rod has 17 children. And because of that, he is an expert in all things kids. Therefore, this felt like an appropriate topic to make to kind of force him to run with and take the lead on. So Rod actually only has 7 kids.
Yep.
So it's not
only
17,
seven. Yep.
But still 7 is like, that's a pretty good group. I grew up in a family with 7 kids and we were almost always the largest family. So yeah,
sweet.
I think you're an expert in this, Rod. Are you ready to roll?
Well, we'll go with it. Yeah. Expert or not, we're doing it.
I like it. Okay. So Rod, let's just start right from the top.
Yeah.
What is the first of your top 5 reasons to raise smart money kids?
Well, because the first one is if you don't, they'll have to learn it the hard way, right? If they're not smart, then just hard knocks is going to knock them down, right? So.
Okay. So think about this, Rod. The hard way could mean a lot of things. So
yeah.
For me, when I was 21, I got married. I felt like I had to put a ring on my wife's finger at the time to, like, that she would be proud of, and therefore I had to go into debt to do it.
Mm-hmm.
That was my first brilliant, not smart money move.
Yeah.
But the point is, like, it was probably the first of several really poor moves that I made. Okay, now to be fair, I feel like I need to give my parents a little bit of a shout out. So my dad was a CPA, and he was actually very money savvy. My mom was too. However, my dad had passed away when I was 19 and I was out. I was away from home for a couple years. So when I got back, my mom wasn't really in a place where she was going to like give me all of the rundown on money.
Mm-hmm.
Right. She did do some and it was helpful, but if I'm being totally honest, like in some ways I went through the, hard knocks way of building, and it was frustrating, man. I made all sorts of bad decisions. And so when I hear this, I'm like, okay, Letting kids fail is one thing,
yeah.
But man, setting them up to succeed is just so important. And we're going to get into some other reasons why I think it's even more important.
Yeah, and you're not going to take away the failures, right? You're just going to help them work their way through it in a way that they can experience it. And we'll get into some of these things as we go, but that's the whole idea.
Okay, so I think if we all use our imagination, we can think of what it means. Like, if you don't, they'll have to learn it the hard way. There's 1,000 lessons that we could probably help our kids avoid having to learn the hard way just by starting to teach them early.
Yeah.
Okay, Rod, what's number 2?
Number 2 is it's harder to get ahead financially today than it was in the past. it's so the world's just different, right? And I don't have, you know, everybody knows this, right? Technology by itself makes such a huge difference in our world that, you know, it's so much easier to spend, right? You know, you or I, when we were kids, we had to make our way down to the corner store or we had to whatever, right? On the other hand, you know, you hear about this all the time, kids jumping on their parents', you know, iPad,
Amazon account, yeah, or whatever.
And they're in the apps or they're, you know, whatever, but they're spending all this money. And on the one hand, in some cases, like the young kids don't even know they're doing it, but even the older kids, you know, and adults, right. Throw, you know, that in front of anybody. And,
definitely a temptation.
It's a very different world in the whole kind of money management, you know, system.
Well, like you said, it doesn't feel like you're spending the money if you do it that way.
Yeah, right.
Like, especially if you just throw it on a credit card, you can be like, okay, I'm going to spend this. You look at your bank account, it's still the same. Like, mm-hmm. What's the difference? Mm-hmm. It's only like $100 a month to pay that thing.
Yeah.
Okay, Rod, I'm passionate about this point because I remember being like in the early 20s and trying to figure out how to get ahead. And one of the things that became really clear was how difficult it would be to get into a house. Okay, so let me talk about a decision I made that was a poor decision, but it was based on, I don't know if what the right word is, but it was based on maybe a faulty premise. And it all has to do with these exact points. So it is much more difficult to get ahead today than it was before for a couple of reasons. One, people don't make as much money as inflation has risen. So just think about what it cost to purchase a house 30 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Well, while we expect there to be an inflation factor and significant over that time, it hasn't been, the difference has been that like real estate has continued to keep growing while wages have been fairly stagnant. And so now you're having people have to buy, you know, double the cost, triple the cost of a house with, you know, the same type of salary that was being earned in the 90s.
Yeah.
And I just think that's a huge problem. Okay. So back to my story really quick. It would have been 2006, I guess. 2006, I got married that was right before, obviously, the big kind of housing mm-hmm. crisis. And so houses were just going up. Like, it felt like every day I'd look at the MLS, everything was up like 10%,
yeah.
Which is crazy. I remember my mom and family around me were like, oh, Christian, you've got to get into a house now, because if you don't get into a house now, you just may never get into a house.
Wow. Yeah.
Right? I know. Really, really sound logic there. But again, it felt that way. It felt that way because I didn't have a lot of perspective on what those things looked like. And so what did I do? In 2007, I purchased a house. And, you know, I was 22 or 23 years old. And I was making, you know, decent money by that point. Enough that I could do it. But I'll be totally honest with you. That decision hurt me for many years to come. Not only because of the real estate market, but just because I wasn't really ready to go into that kind of a financial commitment at that stage of my career. So
gotcha.
Anyway, I am passionate about this because I just genuinely think it's so much harder for kids today. And we have to remember that, right? There's too much of that, like, nostalgic, like, oh, because, you know, because my grandpa made my dad pay for all of his college, that, you know, you've got to do the same. And it's just not the same world. Paying for college today for someone is so much more difficult than, you know, going out and paying for it themselves 25 years ago.
I like it.
Okay, sorry. That was kind of a rant, Rod. But
no, that's
I'm
good. Yeah, this is good. Thank you for that. Okay, so let's go to number three.
Number three.
So number three is that otherwise they'll get sucked into the Wall Street hype machine, just telling everybody to invest as much as possible in mutual funds and just to start young, right? So we're going to say start young, but they're all over there, you know, doing it in different ways. And so, it's just inevitable. If nothing else, you know, pushes you in any other direction, it's just inevitable that you're going to end up in that spot.
Okay, Rod. So I know your family is pretty good at like, keeping away from you know, some of the media and stuff, like at least shielding some of that stuff certainly better than my family. Right. But here's what I can tell you. If you haven't seen it, these kind of stuff is everywhere, mm-hmm. even inside the kids' ads and things like that. I've seen Robin Hood ads, I guess, mm-hmm. for, you know, even on like the podcasts or the YouTube videos that my kids are watching.
Yeah.
So they are learning from somewhere. They're going to learn from somewhere. And the most likely place they're going to learn from is from the Wall Street hype machine, which is really, really good. And so what ends up happening is you may have a philosophy as a parent and may be really prolific at building wealth. But then as your kids get ready to kind of move into that stage of their life, they might have completely different philosophies and just not know any better.
Yeah. Yep.
So that's my main reason for that. And I think that media is more powerful, obviously, today than it's ever been. And so that basically allows for the traditional Wall Street type stuff to become even more powerful in terms of, you know, in terms of influence. And so our goal obviously has to be like, okay, let's make sure that our children don't have to be subject to exclusively to that. Now, it doesn't mean, by the way, that having a stock portfolio with your kid is a bad idea. I'm not suggesting that, right? I'm just suggesting, Rod, that it would be better to have exposure to more things so they can make, you know, better, more informed decisions.
Yeah, be proactive on educating them in ways that the things that you've learned. And again, I think I've said this before, but we meet up with a lot of people who were sucked into that. They are where they are today, almost against all odds, because they became unhappy with what that was doing, and they had to, you know, work through tearing themselves away from that and finding other ways to do what they do. Wouldn't it be better if you didn't have to go through that process? If it was just from the beginning, you had that a little more education, a little more broad scope of what's out there, so you can be making your own decisions, right? I'm not saying you dictate to your kids what they're going to do and what they're not going to do. But at least they'll have exposure. They'll know, they'll have that education, and so they can make those decisions beyond just the hype.
Amen, Rod. Amen. Okay, what is number four?
Okay, number four is that amazingly it's still not taught in school. And I say this like if the teacher down at the high school that teaches the personal finance class heard me say that, they'd be like, oh, you're wrong, because we do. And it's not that finance in general is not taught, at least in some places. I don't know if it's across the board. I know in our local high school in the state of Utah, they require them to take a personal finance class.
Okay, so is that new?
It's new.
Like, do you know when that took place?
I know
since I was in school.
Yeah, within the last few years, my high school kids have taken that class.
Okay, well, that's a step in the right direction.
It is better for them to have at least some exposure to the idea of this is what a bank account is, right? This is what, you know, interest is, compounding interest, etc. So some of the principles I think are there. But the reason why it's on the list is because, they don't get into any depth on it, right? Really, it is just that really high level definition of, you know, this, that, and the other. And quite frankly, it actually is probably a little pushing people toward the hype machine, the Wall Street hype machine, because at least in the class,
it's probably saying the same things,
Yep. In this class,
go start investing in mutual funds.
Yeah. And not only that, but they did like a simulated, investment, situation. Yep. That was a project that they participated in, which again is fine. I don't have any, I'm not saying they shouldn't have done that. It was just that was done, and there were a lot of other things that could have been that weren't done. So
you're saying that can't be the only exposure,
yeah,
right? So what little is taught in school isn't going to get them where they want to go, and what little is taught might even be pushing them in a direction that's different than the philosophies that you have as a parent,
right?
So are all those things fair?
Yep, absolutely.
Okay, I like it. And I honestly just thought that it was completely not taught at all.
Yeah, because it wasn't, right?
It's been a little while since I've been in. What about college? Do you know? I mean, from what I read, it's still there's still not a lot of it. I'm sure you can find classes on personal finance in college. I don't doubt that, right?
Yeah.
But I just, I guess I wonder, is it a core class?
Not when I was there. Not with the, I mean, I have kids in college now, and I guess I should ask them before I say for sure, but I don't think it's a required course. I think it would be something they would choose as an elective. So.
And again, you know, I doubt it's going to talk to people about the value of investing in real assets.
Right.
That's probably not the conversation that's being had inside those types of places. Okay, Rodney, I think that's good. Let's talk about your number five.
Okay,
I like this one.
Number five is my favorite. And this is that they're going to need it when they take over your empire.
Good one.
Okay, and here's the thing. The kind of the antithesis to what I just said is we meet up with a lot of people who will say something like, I don't want to pass on anything to my kids because I don't want to ruin them. And
yeah, we don't want to ruin them.
And I think a lot of us have seen, you know, situations where that happens with an inheritance or even the lottery or things like that, right? Someone hits the jackpot and all of a sudden, you know, the money's gone. So it was worse for them than it would have been if they had never had that happen. But what if instead of that, we educate our kids, we help them understand what it means to be responsible and to make good decisions and to grow wealth so that when they do take over that empire, that they can actually further the things that you were passionate about, that you were able to teach them about. And, you know, so it turns into more like family foundations or, you know, maybe some philanthropic things that can continue on, and it's not ruining them. To the contrary, it's helping them, carry on your legacy of giving back to the community and other, you know, other things like that to create jobs, et cetera, right? All of the things that we think are things that we want to do. Well, let's teach our kids. Let's help them see the value that they can, you know, give to society and to themselves and to, you know, your grandkids and great grandkids, et cetera, down the line, because they've learned how to be really smart with money.
You know what I like about this point you threw up there, Rod? I like that it's absolutely true, like in the literal sense. So we're fortunate that most of our clients fit into like the high income, high net worth category. Mm-hmm. And so they literally are creating or have an empire that, I know, I joke when I say it, when we say empire, but certainly something of significance that has been built that they want to continue on through their family to build generational wealth, yeah. Right? Create, you know, we talked about, I remember Jim Rocker, he said significance, right? He wanted to, and for him creating significance, a big part of that was bringing that education to the next generation and teaching kids how to do it. And he's a really good example.
Absolutely.
Kind of takes that one to the bank.
Yep. Absolutely.
But yeah, I think that there's a lot of important points there. And, while we say it tongue in cheek, it's just the truth. Like at some point we're going to want to be able to pass both the things that we've learned and the wealth that we've built generally to the next generation, or maybe it's to charity, but either way, there's going to need to be a clear path to help you accomplish the things that you want to get accomplished in the next generation. And so for that reason, it becomes really important.
Absolutely.
The kids know how to take over. Okay, Rodney. So we've talked about your top five reasons to raise smart money kids.
Yes.
And now, for a bonus, we're going to talk about five ways that you actually do it or that you recommend doing it.
Yeah. And again, I won't claim the expert level at this point, but it is something I think a lot about. And there are some things that, you know, that we have done and do with our children that I think, you know, hopefully can be valuable for people.
I'm certain of it. Rod's got great kids, by the way. So if everyone could raise their kids like seriously, Rod, or your kids are basically perfect. It's kind of ridiculous. You're like that's crazy. But all from the outside, it feels that way. So you've done something right, my friend. Okay.
Well, thanks
for saying
that.
Let's get into it, Rod. Yeah, you're welcome.
Okay.
Five ways to do it. Number one.
Okay, number one is make them a cash flow kid. Okay. So people are thinking, okay, that sounds corny, and maybe it is, but here's where that comes from. Number one, expose them to the kinds of things that you learn about. So I've talked about how kind of one of the big things that made a difference in my life was reading Rich Dad Poor Dad and then Cashflow Quadrant. And then it went on from there. We bought the board game. He has, you know, Cashflow 101 is a board game that we bought and play. Mm-hmm. So that's more for adults. And then there's a kid-friendly one that's called Cashflow Kids, and or Cashflow for Kids. And the goal, like you win the game when you become a cash flow kid. So that's where that comes from. So make them cash flow kids.
Does that mean that you're making money? Is that what a cash flow
kid
is?
Yeah, it's learning how to, it's not that you don't have expenses. It's not, you know, whatever, but it's learning to manage your money, like make it, invest it, save it, be smart in the way you spend it. And that's how you become a cash flow kid. Essentially, like it goes back to the whole premise of the books, which is create a situation where you have more passive income than you have on your regular expenses. And that's how you become a cash flow kid in the game.
I think it's brilliant, by the way. Teaching kids at that stage, like that difference between expenses and income is just huge. Yeah. And being able to show them that we have to have more income than expenses in order for us to do the things we want to do. And I just think it's a great idea.
So and the difference between an asset and liability, right? Just all the different mm-hmm. things. Again, the principles that we learn in those books, it plays it out on the board game.
Okay. I'm kind of old now, Rod, but when I heard make them a cash flow kid, I kind of thought like of the Toys R Us kid model.
Oh, there you go. See?
Wouldn't be. So we probably don't want to make him a Toys R Us kid in this case. But I really like the idea of making cash flow kids, quote unquote, like you said, a little bit cheesy. But if you can get kids young learning how to build cash flow at that stage, that's going to stick with them. Yeah. That's going to stick with them, and they're going to keep doing it.
And really the point is it's about education, right? Help them, again, give them exposure to those resources and things. Don't underestimate what they can understand, right? So Rich Dad Poor Dad was written in a relatively basic level, right? It doesn't get into a lot of really deep subjects, and so don't be afraid to expose them early.
And I think that's an example of a good example of the capability that kids actually have. Mm-hmm. Right. And then the other thing I would say is when you think of Rich Dad Poor Dad, it's simple, but just it's been unbelievably profound.
Absolutely.
So those two, well, you get them.
Yeah.
Okay, Rod, why don't we jump into the second one?
Okay, so number two is be open about how you make money decisions. And this is one that we weren't always great with. My older kids would probably hear that and be like, okay, I don't remember a lot of that going on. but I'll give a recent example. So recently we bought a new car, and we were intentional about just being open about our thought process behind, you know, what we were doing, how we were gonna, you know, we had a budget, this is how we were analyzing our options, etc. Right? I don't need to go through all the things, but we were just trying to be really open with our kids about what we were doing, and these are the options we're considering, and we like that one, but it just pushes us beyond our budget. Not because the price of the car was there, but because with taxes and licensing and all the other things that add on top of it, that pushes us several thousand dollars beyond our budget. And so that was the idea. Like we tried to be careful. We're like, hey, we're not doing this so you go around and, you know, tell everybody else what we're doing here. We do have some, you know, level of privacy we want to maintain with that. But at least with our kids, we wanted to be open with them on that.
Rod, let me tell you about my first attempt at buying a car. So you just spurred a memory. I remember it well. I went in there, or this was probably, maybe it was my second. My mom helped me like at 17 or 18. My parents did. And then the next round I went on my own. Mm-hmm. And I remember I went in there with a budget. I knew that they were going to be it was going to be a budget on two sides. It was going to be the total cost of the car. That's how I wanted to budget. Mm-hmm. They don't want you to budget that way.
Right.
They want you to budget based on your monthly payment.
Yep.
Okay. So I gave a little bit on that and I was like, okay, I can, well, here's what my monthly payment, this is my max, right? Mm-hmm. We need to keep a monthly payment at like $200, I think was what it was back at that point. And, I go through the process, like I'm excited about the car that I've chosen. I actually sit down now that they've prepared the paperwork and the payment was like $248. And I was like, what just happened here?
Yeah.
Well, now that was a little bit shady on the car, the salesman's part. But that's like real life. Mm-hmm. That's what happens, right? You have to anticipate those extra things. Otherwise, they'll just be staring at you in the face. And all of a sudden, I had a decision in that moment to make, which, by the way, another poor decision. I could say, oh, you know what? I had, this was the budget that I came in with. I'm not pushing past that. But I was so tired of dealing with the situation that I was like, fine, I'll just figure it out. And I went and made another poor money decision.
Gotcha.
I wish I could start naming some of the good money decisions I made when I was young.
Oh, that'll come. I'm sure the conversation will just develop from here.
Okay. All right. We'll wait for it. Okay. Well, anyway, this is one that I do think is really important. Being open about money is, you know, for the older generations, that's a really difficult thing because it was very private. Even my dad, like, he would give us a few nuggets here and there, and he did help us with things like, you know, learning how to file taxes and some of those types of things. But as far as opening up and really knowing what my parents' financial situation was like, that was more close to the chest, right? Close to the vest. So anyway, I think that changing that narrative and being willing to teach kids, and like you said, you know, there's a level of privacy that's important. We're not going to go and, you know, but that's, again, that's part of teaching. That's part of opening it up is letting them know that, you know, this is what we're talking about and this is when it's appropriate to actually have these conversations.
Sweet.
All right, Rod. I think that was a good one.
Okay. So now we're on number three on the ways to do it. So number three is real world opportunities. And maybe two and three are kind of go hand in hand because as Jody and I have real opportunities to buy a car, buy a house, you know, whatever, involving the kids in that. And that's really what it comes down to is helping them see what it means to be an adult, like to be, you know, in society and manage your money accordingly. But they're in a little microcosm for them. They're going to do the same thing. And so it's helping them learn to save and have money management and even learning, you know, how to start to invest and the thought process that goes behind that. And as they get older, then starting to do the investing and doing it side by side, right? Involving them in some of your investment opportunities and again, thought processes and the way that you analyze a deal and the different things, the budget, right. Or, you know, different, thresholds that you're not willing to go over based on the way that you're looking at specific things. So
I sometimes listen to the Bigger Pockets podcast and Brandon Turner is one of the hosts. He likes to talk about how he bought a piece of real estate for his daughter, like right when she was born. Mm-hmm. And the plan in that was to make it a real world example and use it as a teaching tool and eventually give it to her. Right.
Yeah.
But I really like the idea of providing real world opportunities and you can do it in different ways. So in my family, my kids are young. But we try to at least get them involved. So we have, you know, they have like a debit card that they can fill money on. When they want to spend money, they can say, okay, here's how much money I'm spending. Mm-hmm. If they get it, they give it to us. We put it on the card. That way they can kind of get a feel for what like money in the 21st century looks like.
Yeah.
Because cash is probably, you know, even though cash is king, in a kid's hand, it's not so much that way.
Right.
So learning how to do the digital side of it, I think, is really important. But then it can change and evolve as we get older. The thing that crosses my mind, like that I have every intention of doing, I have a 14-year-old daughter and two or three years, we're going to need to have a car for her. Mm-hmm. And my intention is to go and like actually work together with her on that process and understand it, kind of and again, try to allow her to lead the process.
Yeah.
And so I think we can do that. And then, like you said, I really love the idea of getting involved early in the investment side and actually starting to say, hey, like, let me teach you how we build wealth.
Yeah.
Because teaching how to, like, manage money, it's a critical skill. It's a critical life skill. However, it's incredibly rare for people to have the skill set to know how to actually build wealth. And for us to be able to pass that along, I think it's pretty cool.
Sweet.
Rod, number four.
Okay. So number four I have down is money management system. And this could mean a lot of different things. I'll use my mom as an example. She is amazing in just how she budgets and tracks what she's doing and her spending.
She is one organized lady.
Amazing. And I won't pretend that translated over to me very well, which is clearly my own fault, right? She showed it and I didn't, you know, live it on that level. But so that's part of it, right? Understanding the money that's coming in and where it's going, et cetera. I'll give another example on this. So with our kids, what we've taught them is that when they bring in any money, then they're going to break it into certain categories or five categories. So first thing is we're religious. So the first thing is they give to God. So 10% tithing, is first, but then second is 10% toward philanthropy. The world is about a lot more than just them. There's a lot of other things going out there. There are people suffering, et cetera, et cetera. And so we should and need to just plan into things, opportunities to help other people. Okay. So those are the first two things. But then secondly, or then after that, then they put 40% toward long-term savings, 20% toward short-term savings, and then 20% is for spending. So it's actually kind of fun, not so much for them, but maybe for us to see them work.
You run a tight ship, Rod.
Well,
I like it.
It's fun to see them work through things in their brain. So they're like, okay, I have this, I want to buy, you know, whatever. And it costs $50. And they're like, okay, how much money do I have to make?
They're probably thinking, man, that is, I've got to make a lot of money to get that.
Yeah. But it works, right? Because they've been creative in the way that they've made money, right? They've become little entrepreneurs in some cases. And they just know, right? If that's my goal, this is what I have to do to get there. And along the way, they're building up these other things, right? Their long-term savings is growing because they're motivated, not necessarily because they're thinking about, you know, all their long-term goals about future education or again, in our family, you know, serving a mission or whatever that takes money in the future. Those aren't the things that become the primary motivator, but all those things are being built up by that primary motivation of, you know, whatever the widget that they want.
Right. Okay. You told me, I don't know if it was yesterday or this morning, but you told me that your daughter managed to like take you to task on one of these deals. I thought it was awesome.
Yeah.
Was it Eva?
Eva.
Cashflow Kid? Okay.
Yep.
Tell us about
okay,
it.
Okay. So she's our 10-year-old and she, she just naturally has this, knack for looking out for other people. And you see it in a lot of different ways.
Very so cool.
She kind of takes little kids under her wing, you know, regardless of what setting we're in or whatever. Right. So you see it in a lot of different ways. Well, she caught wind of, you know, prior to Thanksgiving, a food drive, right. For specifically for Thanksgiving. And she wanted to help out on that. And so, I didn't know all the things she had planned, but I was like, okay, if you will, you know, whatever money you're going to pitch into this, then I'll pitch in some as well. And
it was like 1-9, Rob.
Yes.
I mean, for charity, you can't go wrong on that.
Yeah. So yeah. So every dollar she was going to put in, I put in 9 but what she did was, is she made all these little things, went around the neighborhood selling it, telling people what the reason she was doing it is as a fundraiser for
so
people.
Brilliant.
And so all of a sudden, you know, she comes back and she has like $100 that she's putting in. And anyway, it was awesome. It was just a really cool, experience, right? Real life kind of thing where she was motivated.
That's a cash flow kid, Rod. And it's all in all the best ways.
Yeah.
Like she wanted to cash flow and create money for the charity for other people.
Yeah.
Gosh, that's super cool, especially at that young of an age.
Yeah, that's fun.
Okay, thanks for sharing it with us, Rod. Why don't we talk number five?
Okay, number five is get started early. And I feel like this with a lot of things in life. I think maybe a lot of times we don't give kids enough credit for their ability to grasp on to things and principles and learn. But if we give them a chance, then, you know, that my experience is that they step up. And so, so don't be afraid even at a very young age to get them. Again, it's going to be at a basic level, but just the idea that, hey, we have this income coming in. We like to have cool things. We live in a great place, but we have these things. We choose it, right? I'll give you an example. One of the things that we've tried really hard to do is, like, you know, whatever, you go to a fair and there are all the vendors there and there's, you know, all the food and whatever. And it used to be that I would say, oh, well, we don't have the money for that. And that wasn't true, right? Number one, it wasn't true. Number two, it wasn't teaching the right principle. So we've changed our language on that. And we say we are choosing not to buy those things right now because we have other priorities that our money is going toward. And so, but again, that at a very young age, you know, 3 or 4 year old can understand the difference between I can't versus I choose not to.
So Rod, I was looking up, those are great, by the way. I was looking up, this morning and last night, some articles on teaching kids mm-hmm. about money.
Yeah.
And, well, you know, I'm a really big fan of Dave Ramsey.
Yes. So I know that of you.
Okay, there's a little sarcasm there. But to be fair, like I always say this, I don't believe in his philosophies around investing. Mm-hmm. However, when it comes to basic money management skills, most of them are pretty good.
Yeah.
So he had an article. It was called 15 Ways to Teach Kids About Money. And I'm not going to go through those 15 ways, but I was going to name a couple of them that were specific to the early stage. So we broke it down into how to teach preschoolers and kindergartners okay. about money as a starting point. And he says, use a clear jar to save. That makes sense, mm-hmm. right? They can see what's happening. Set an example. Show them that stuff costs money.
Yeah.
Like, that's the kind of stuff you're talking about on, like, that young of a level. Like I said, with my kids, we use the debit card system. Mm-hmm. At least it starts to show them how they can purchase money, that when they purchase something, it's no longer there,
yeah.
and they have to budget around those things, mm-hmm. right? Couple other quick ones that I thought were interesting. He said, show opportunity cost. I really like that idea.
Smart.
Because that's a concept that most people just don't even know, mm-hmm. right? I hadn't heard of the concept of opportunity cost until I was 25 or something like that.
Yeah.
And so, you know, learning. And that's really what you were talking about when you gave that example. You were saying, hey, look, we're choosing not to do this. And they're like, so it kind of all goes together to help understand those core money principles.
Right.
And opportunity cost is huge because sometimes we go and buy things impulsively and don't realize what that actually could have cost us. Okay, a couple more, Ed. Give commissions, not allowances. Avoid opportunity costs. Stress the importance of giving. So these are all really, really good. I like this one. Teach them contentment.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a bunch yeah. of ways that we can start. But we have a couple of specific ways that we think that everybody should start. And so why don't you touch on those, Rod?
Yeah, and this is something that we see a lot of our clients doing. We talked earlier about getting the kids involved in investments and whatnot. And to begin with, it's the stuff that you're doing and investing in, but it morphs and translates into the stuff that they can start investing in. And what better way to do that than to get them involved with an investment optimizer policy, right? So in other words...
And we have tons of people doing
it. We do. Yep, we
have
lots.
That's what's so cool about it.
Yeah. I mean, if we're going to be saving somewhere, then why not start doing it, start building that opportunity fund through the investment optimizer?
Well, and it can be so multi-purposed. That's one of the things that's so great about it. We've heard about the concept of saving, college saving through whole life policies for years. People have been doing that. And the reason they've been doing it is because it's a safe and simple way to generate a reasonable good return that you know is going to be there at that portion at the time that they want to go to college, right? Well, the nice thing is that you can be doing that and multi-purpose it and also use it to teach investing, and especially investing in things like cash flow. So I love this concept, and I'm really excited because we just have had tons and tons of people purchasing policies for their kids. And again, the reason I like it is because you're getting kids involved early when they get to that point in time where it's just not going to be the kind of surprise that it was for probably was for me.
Absolutely. Yep. I couldn't agree more.
Okay, Rod. So the get started early. We had become savers, start the investment optimizer, start investing early. Dave Ramsey had some good ideas for us too. I think that covers our show for today. So thanks so much for joining us today, and we will see you next week on the Money Insights Podcast.
Thank you for listening to the Money Insights Podcast. To learn more about the financial and business strategies discussed in this show, visit moneyinsights.net.